You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you're having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McCollum. Well, the Howard government's plan for a $1 billion rural broadband network is dead, as the federal government scrapped the Opel WiMAX network on April the 2nd, on the grounds that the contractors failed to meet the required conditions. Surprise, surprise. Many in the know are saying this wasn't completely unexpected, and Tech Talk Radio's own mobile data expert, Mark Diggins, questioned the technology and method of the rollout last year, when the contract was originally awarded. Others in the field say the previous government's idea was more like a hopscotch sort of solution, something for here and something for there. So having a national approach and then lingering on something on the side like Opel was not really something that fitted the new government's sort of plan of action. The Communications Minister, Senator Stephen Conroy, says his department has established that Opel WiMAX would only cover 72% of underserved premises, as they're called, and so failed to meet the terms of the contract. Opel's contract required it to provide coverage to 90% of such homes. Both Singtel and Futurus insist that they had met all the conditions in the contract, adding that its termination sends the wrong signals to the industry. So does this open the door again for Telstra? Or was it never shut in the first place? And why did Telstra turn on ADSL2 in all exchanges recently? A policy shift for no apparent reason? We'll take an in-depth look at this decision and its ramifications from a political, consumer and technical point of view.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner looks at embedded mobile phones in your body. Secondary school kids asked to give fingerprints as ID for exams. Mozilla Firefox 3 Beta 5 hits the streets. And Microsoft's OpenOffice XML is now a standard. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, power supplies are cut to thousands of Melburnians. Opel's billion-dollar broadband deal scrapped by the federal government. Laser pointers to be banned after attacks on planes. Australia's bid for the world's biggest radio telescope. And Google gets sued for street-level information privacy breaches. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Thousands of Melburnians are still without power after fierce storms lashed metropolitan suburbs on Wednesday last week. The tail end of Cyclone Pancho damaged buildings and uprooted trees across Victoria. An estimated 420,000 people lost power at the height of the storm in the early hours of Wednesday afternoon. As of Saturday, electricity provider Alinta still had 7,500 customers waiting for connection, while SP AusNet still had 3,000 customers without power. The state opposition has called for an inquiry into the management of supply reconnection and why it's taken so long for many families to have electricity restored. Energy spokesman Mr. Robert Clark spoke on Melbourne Radio last week.
Granted that the storms that we've suffered this week have been pretty horrific, nonetheless, questions need to be asked about whether the response has been adequate, particularly in the context of the deteriorations in overall reliability that have been experienced in Victoria over the last 2 or 3 years.
The Essential Services Commission is Victoria's independent economic regulator of electricity, gas and water services. Chief Executive Mr. Paul Fearon spoke on Melbourne Radio last week and said the power companies were doing their best to restore services in difficult conditions.
I think the structure of the
the industry, the nature of the assets on the ground means that these sort of events do and can have significant impact on people, and regrettably there are a large number of people who can be without power for some time.
The government was in talks over the weekend with emergency services and power companies to arrange financial aid and food for those struggling to cope without electricity. Federal Communications Minister Stephen Conroy last week scrapped the former coalition government's billion-dollar regional broadband deal with the Opel consortium. Mr. Conroy said the decision was made after an internal analysis showed that Opel could not provide coverage reasonably equivalent to 90%. But Optus argued that Senator Conroy's decision was based on flawed data. Optus CEO Mr. Paul O'Sullivan said that in his view, the Departments of Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy has now made a flawed recommendation to the minister. In a tit-for-tat environment between the former coalition government and the incumbent telecommunications carrier Telstra last year, the billion-dollar deal was awarded to Opel by Senator Helen Coonan to provide broadband to the bush using a combination of fixed and wireless technology. Telstra has welcomed Senator Conroy's announcement, with Jeff Booth, Telstra Countrywide Group Managing Director, saying it was a common-sense decision. A recent spate of attacks on aircraft from household laser pointers has prompted the federal government to introduce import bans on the handheld devices. Laser pointers are used legitimately by lecturers, surveyors and IT professionals, but a number of recent incidents near Sydney Airport, where pilots have reported green lasers being aimed directly into planes' cockpits, have prompted an urgent review of legislation to ban high-powered laser devices. The federal government confirmed it will restrict the importation of laser pointers after a high-level meeting between state and federal politicians, police and customs officials on Friday last week. New South Wales police have so far been unable to locate the offenders involved in the attacks. Australia's Prime Minister is supporting a bid by Australian scientists to provide a site for the world's largest radio telescope. SKA, the Square Kilometre Array project, will be made up of thousands of dishes across Australia, making it 50 times more sensitive than any radio telescope available today. While Australia is bidding against South Africa to build the telescope, astronaut Andy Thomas says Australia is a prime contender for the project, citing economic wherewithal, intellectual capital, infrastructure and political stability as giving Australia a leading edge over other contenders. The telescope would be comprised of clusters of antennas spread over thousands of kilometres, with a core site expected to be built at Bullaby Station, which is 300 kilometres northeast of Geraldton. And a Western Pennsylvanian couple are suing internet search giant Google for invading their privacy after photos of their home on the Street View website were allegedly taken by Google trespassing in the family's driveway. A lawyer for Aaron and Christine Boring said that Google entered their private driveway to take street-level pictures and that the pictures of their home have violated the couple's privacy and devalued their property. A Google spokesman said the property owners can get the company to remove images if they cite a good reason and can prove they own the property depicted. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Let's talk about Telstra, $9 million Olympic deal.
It's all going to run a lot smoother in the future, which is going to be good. It's going to be good for business. It's going to be much easier.
What's disappointing is that they've got the opportunity to set up
to really do it properly,
do it properly, and they haven't.
He's never short of an opinion, is he?
No, he's not.
Telstra, if you want to explain what's going on with the next year coverage, give us an email.
Yeah, you can have it if you want to have something go ding.
Oh, no.
Is that what it sounded like?
Yes, it was.
First day back at work today?
Crikey. Oh, good. I'm going away. I don't care.
Now, it's interesting that Simon's a Gmail user.
We did know that poor old Google did, but they were compromised.
Slash rant.
The spam is becoming a real issue again.
For years and years, though, every phone I bought was Nokia, and I still use one. Is that?
You're doing a pretty snazzy website for 20 mil, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
You give them the five pages, contact us, customers,
even optimize it.
Where's your note?
We have a note?
Yeah.
I come not. That's in here more often than you do, buddy.
It says me.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
No,
It's good to be back in your headphones. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio for yet another week. Andrew McComb here, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan. Boys, how are we this evening?
I'm here and I'm well, thanks. Andrew, how are you?
You are. Did you bring a note like you said in the teaser there?
No, I didn't. Don't need a note. It's been 3 or 4 weeks in a row now.
It's been impressively, what's the word?
Reliable.
Consistent.
Consistent, yes.
Yes.
I'm glad you feel that way.
Happy birthday, Dr. Ron. Happy birthday, Dr. Ron.
Oh, thank you very much. It's very kind.
And you brought in the cake, too. We can try and set the webcam up later tonight, and we can show people what the cake looks like.
And this is Dr. Ron's done an excellent job. She's got Happy Birthday, Dr. Ron on the
That's
cake.
That's very good.
So if we can't get the webcam going, we'll take a photo or something, because we can't cut into that before we...
So is there a file in there so you can escape?
From here, tonight, maybe. Seeing the show ends in 2 hours. You need to be home in 2 hours and 10 minutes. Okay.
So how many birthdays is it now, Dr. Ron?
20 for a few years.
Yeah. You're looking pretty good for 19, I reckon.
Thank you very much. Very kind of you to say.
Dear. Well, it's been a very interesting week in technology as per normal. The bombshell was dropped, which to a lot of people wasn't that unexpected in some circles, about the Opel consortium being given the old heave-ho. Thanks for coming. You're not quite managing to meet the requirements of said coverage area. And now they put it up for a tender again. I think also, Dr. Ron, you alluded, I think last week, or might even been the week before, that repetition rollout, where we're going to get two networks, that was also one of the concerns of the government this week.
It was one of the considerations. Yeah, we had it there as a news item. So in case you missed that, Federal Communications Minister Stephen Conroy has scrapped the former coalition government's $1 billion regional broadband deal. Mm. So they were aiming at about 90%. It's coverage, weren't they?
Yep, they were going to
use
underrepresented premises.
Mm, and they were going to do it by using a wireless technology called WiMAX.
That's it.
And the problem area was Queensland. Just didn't work in Queensland, apparently.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, Senator Conroy said it's his department that's done an analysis of the facts and figures, and he believes that they will only cover 72% with their proposal.
Mm.
All lies, damn lies and statistics, I guess.
Yes, you can prove anything with statistics.
With those numbers?
Statistics.
Statistics,
yeah.
Yes.
That's the word you're looking for.
You can't say the word statistics when you need to, but you can prove a lot with them.
Now, it's going to be interesting for Telstra, because they went into bat with Senator, the Honourable Senator Helen Coonan over this very said issue, and transparency was not apparently forthcoming.
Mm.
And so I guess everyone from both sides of the camp, government and private sector, are also probably going to be fairly... except for two companies, going to be fairly happy that it's up for grabs again and going to be part of the big picture now, rather than just split in half and rural and things.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the new plan is that emerges from it all. But I for one, was never happy that they were using such a reliance on a wireless technology. That seemed to me to be the wrong
approach.
And
a flawed wireless technology, as we're about to hear. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address. Feel free to send us an email there whilst we're on air. We'd love to hear from you all. Also, our SMS number is 0430-582077. You can send us a text there. We actually did get a text the other day, too. Says he bringing it up on the screen. It says, love the show, streaming now via switch1197.com. Anthony from... something or other .net.
We won't disclose your personal email address, Anthony, so, but thanks for listening. It's great.
So if you want to send us a text, we're listening. The text screen is up on the as we speak. So, feel free to contribute. We'd like to hear from you. And, of course, the forum at forum.techtalkradio.com.au. Now, getting back to Opel, however you'd like to call them, a consortium of two companies, Singtel and Elders.
Yeah, Singtel owning Optus, which is the op part of it.
Yeah. The op part, yes. Let's have a bit of a recap of what's happened over the past few days and where we are now. In the meanwhile, feel free, send us an email.
Bring out your dead! Bring out your dead!
The Howard government's plan for a $1 billion rural broadband network is dead. The federal government has scrapped the Opel WiMAX network on the grounds that the contractors failed to meet the required conditions. Futurus Corporation, which owns Elders, and Singapore Telecommunications, Optus's parent, both told the Australian Stock Exchange of the cancellation of the contract last week. Futurus and Optus, in equal partnership called Opel, were awarded a US $958 million contract by the Howard government to construct a broadband network for rural and regional Australia. The Communications Minister, Senator Stephen Conroy, says his department has established that Opel WiMAX would only cover 72% of identified underserved premises, as they're called, and so fail to meet the terms of the contract. Opel's contract required it to provide coverage to 90% of such homes. The highly anticipated decision makes way for Senator Conroy's $4.7 billion national broadband network contract to proceed. Senator Conroy came to the decision when internal analysis conducted by his department showed that Opel could not provide coverage reasonably equivalent to 90%. Stephen Conroy.
The decision was based upon an assessment that was performed by my department, the Department of Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy. My department's assessment showed that Opel did not meet coverage requirements set out in the conditions precedent of the contract. The Rudd government publicly committed to honouring the contract between the Commonwealth and Opel. As the conditions precedent of the contract were not met, the contract has been terminated. Regional and rural Australia will not miss out on improved broadband services as a result of this decision. The Rudd government has committed up to $4.7 billion and regulatory changes to build a new national broadband network that will deliver minimum connection speeds of 12 megabits per second to 98% of Australian homes and businesses. The 2% who will not have direct access to the new network will be able to receive support through the Australian Broadband Guarantee.
The question needs to be asked, was this a flawed proposal from the start based on the backroom deals and then Howard government's falling out with Telstra? Broadband was a hot political issue in the lead-up to the last federal election. And last June, the communications minister at the time, Senator Helen Coonan, was busy spruiking the benefits of the contract awarded to the Optus and Elders Consortium.
Basically, what we'll be offering is universal coverage at a fraction of Labor's cost in 2 years' time, and that will then also allow people living in rural and regional areas to get metro comparable prices.
But 9 months on, and with a new federal government and an activist broadband minister in the shape of Senator Stephen Conroy, the deal is now off. Optus CEO Paul O'Sullivan said, in his view, the Department of Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy had now made a flawed recommendation to the minister, reflecting serious errors in its database of underserved premises, which led to its underestimate of the number of locations which would benefit. He went on to say Opel believes the department's process was flawed. Information was not provided to Opel in accordance with its contract, and there was little dialogue with Opel after it lodged the implementation plan in early January. The government also was concerned that the networks would be duplicated, as it has proposed its own fibre-to-the-node broadband plan, according to the statements. Naturally, Futurus and Optus maintain the Opel plan satisfies the prescribed coverage requirements. If the companies are unable to recover money from the government, Futurus will make a provision of $15 million as a non-recurring item, and Optus will write off $9 million. According to Opel, the cancelled plan would have delivered improved broadband services to 889,322 underserved premises in rural and regional Australia within 2 years at metro comparable prices. But did the contract's cancellation really come as a shock to industry analysts? Telco analyst Mark McDonnell.
It comes as some shock. The parties who were directly involved had been telling the market that they expected a confirmation of the funding arrangements fairly soon. So this is really quite contrary to that.
Tech Talk Radio panellist and CDMA optimiser Mark Diggins was sceptical in the way Opel had mapped out its coverage.
When they decided to show how much coverage they would have from the WiMAX rollout, they put a dot on the map and then drew a circle around it. They didn't take into account any of the topography.
Hills.
Yep.
Where
they
the
didn't
hills?
Take into account any of the dense foliage and how that affects radio waves and that sort of thing. Yeah, we've all worked in radio in this, you know, on the radio technical side of things, and we know that, you know, it's hard to predict radio coverage and that sort of thing. And I think Telstra went in and showed what they thought would actually happen and where they could roll out and that sort of thing. And this other one have just gone, no, here's a dot on the map, draw a circle around it, that's our coverage site, without taking into account all these other things. And at 2.5 gigahertz or wherever they're going to roll it up there, it's like we described when NextG was rolling out. It's better to roll it out at 800 megs, you'll actually get further coverage than roll it out at 2.1 gigahertz sort of thing. So if this is rolling out at that frequency, it's not going to get very far.
So what's actually occurred here is that the government has decided unilaterally that one of the conditions of the contract hasn't been met, and that therefore they are under no obligation to provide $958 million of funding that was previously committed. So is there an element of politics involved in the decision? Mark McDonnell again.
At one level, there is a political dimension to it. At another, it's a commercial process. And at yet another level, it is about technology choices and policies relating to how broadband services are going to be delivered outside of the capital cities.
The decision has been welcomed by Telstra, which pitched for the rural broadband contract but failed. Telstra's regulatory chief, Jeff Booth, is keen to pitch for the contract again.
Clearly the government has judged that this consortium, the Singtel and Elders Opel consortium, failed to meet the requirements, the fundamental requirements of the contract.
So is this Telstra saying, I told you so?
No, I think this is just a great opportunity now for the industry and the government to work together to provide a solution which really is going to serve regional Australians, but all Australians, well and truly into the 21st century. And the way that we see it within Telstra is that the industry and the government's now got a great opportunity to provide the right technology to service Australians and build the network properly. So rather than build a piecemeal network, build a network which is going to be rolled out appropriately and really get out to all Australians. There are so many people that will benefit from a broadband network which delivers all of the health and the education requirements that people are going to need into the future.
Telstra took this decision to court and targeted the former communications minister, Senator Helen Coonan, personally. Is this vindication?
I guess that's all history now, and from our point of view, we just now want to do what we believe we do best, and that is to go out there and look after our customers and build this network with the government.
The future of broadband for rural Australia is once again up in the air. Or is it? Paul Wood, an independent telecommunications analyst, says this decision means the new government can get on with its plans to roll out its so-called broadband revolution.
I think that this government's plans for the future of broadband are quite different from the last government. And this government really had a national view, a vision of how to take broadband forwards into this country. The previous government was more like a hopscotch sort of solutions, something for here, something for there, etc. So, you know, having a national approach and then having lingering on something on the side like Opel was not really something that fitted the new government's sort of plan of action.
Bring out today!
Here's one! Ninepence.
I'm not dead!
What? Nothing. Here's your ninepence.
I'm not dead!
There. He said he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I'm not!
He isn't?
Well, he will be soon. He's very ill.
I'm getting better!
No, you're not. You'll be stone dead in a moment.
So there's the Opel wash-up.
Stone dead.
Stone dead, yes. Not dead yet.
I think it is.
Anyway, that sounded fairly terminal to me. Hopefully there's a bit of a clue as to what's going on. Everyone goes, yes, clear as mud now. But I think it's pretty straightforward. What they were trying to offer is what the government thought, well, in hindsight, I don't think you can really deliver.
Mm.
And I think from a political point of view, the Rudd government has to now basically give it its best shot. I know he was talking about 12 megabits per second, which I think in about 5 years' time is going to be awfully slow, but nonetheless, at least we're starting to roll out some form of broadband for all Australians. And for those of you listening overseas, we're a fairly sizable country here, as you're probably no doubt aware, and we don't have the density of population to support
yes.
such high-speed
rollout. Sizable in terms of space and not population, which is a most unfortunate combination.
Yes, yes. So there we go. That's the rollout. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb and Graham Callaghan in this evening. Although that must have been, I got another, you know how last week we were talking about Next G coverage?
We were.
And I was telling you about the fact that I took a handset up to the property where we live and we're approximately 8 kilometres from an exchange.
Yes, and I encouraged you to contact Telstra
and
let them know about the shortfall in their network.
I did.
What did they say?
Well, if you go to the very front of the Telstra homepage, there's the phone number, 1-800-888-888, I think it is, which you ring if you want to dob in a cell that's not working or something to that effect.
Anyway, I did actually ring this number. I was over my lunch. I thought, oh, well, I'll sit down and eat and we'll give it a go.
You've got half an hour for lunch. It can't possibly take more than 30 minutes to get through to someone and report this.
Anyway, 29 minutes and 42 seconds.
See?
And three telemarketers later, I finally got to convey my message to Telstra that the service area, which according to their map was perfect for handheld coverage.
It was where you needed it.
Where I needed it, everywhere I needed it, and it wasn't there. And I thought I'd ring and tell them about that.
But why did it take you 29 minutes?
Well, when I went to the first person, the first person said, that's interesting, and then tried to say, have you got the right handset? And I said, I've got a handset with a blue tick on it. In fact, if you go to your web page, it's the very front page phone there on your website. Okay. Have you tried an external antenna? Well, if you knew anything about the handset, there is no provision for an external antenna. It has a blue tick on it, but it has no provision for an external. Oh, it must be a handset that's faulty. I said, no, I don't think the handset's faulty because it had beautiful coverage all the way across across the NextG network, all the way up there. And it's only when I reached my destination where you allegedly, according to your service maps, have coverage. Oh, hang on, I'll put you through to the next apartment.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, anyway, so we've done the basic, you know, ascertain that it wasn't that. Anyway, I spent another 10 minutes on hold waiting to speak to the next person.
And they said, welcome to Telstra, my name's Blair, how can I help you?
Yes. How did you know? Have you done this sort of call before too?
Maybe once or twice.
Anyway, so I'm
not even a Telstra customer anymore.
I repeated the story to a similar effect, to which the outcome was fairly similar.
Maybe you've got a faulty handset. I'll pop you through to...
Well, no, actually, the second person was actually a female. The first guy was a bloke and the second guy was a woman. And she was quite intent on telling me jokes. Like, this is the next line of defence within Telstra. By now, you've got a customer who's pretty narky, who's not getting anywhere. But the next telemarketer sort of started to tell jokes.
Right.
And they were fairly lame ones at that too. So anyway, we persisted here with it a little bit, and she put me on hold and tested things and did this and did that, and came to the conclusion, oh, you need to speak to someone in network design, or words to that effect. I can't remember exactly what the words were. Anyway, then I spoke to another chap, and this is probably about the 25-minute mark of the 29-minute and 42-second phone call, to which he said, okay, I'll log it as a fault. Thanks for that. We'll get back to you in 3 days. How many days do you reckon that's been since then?
Oh, the last Tech Talk Radio was 7 days ago. I'm guessing about 6.5 days.
Yeah, about five. Yeah, you're not far off the mark. I still haven't heard from them or anything like that. So you just have to ask how serious they are if they do want to switch off CDMA on the 28th day of this month, and how you hear these guys on the radio, the senior Telstra exec, saying, oh, we're really keen. And you get that level of service when you ring 1-800-888-888. Anyway, there you go. That was my experience. Since then, the phone has been washed.
Tell me about the famous or infamous phone washing incident of 2008.
What is it with you and phones and water, Andrew? Well, an ongoing problem with you, isn't it?
This was no doing of mine. My good wife was attempting to do what she does on the weekend.
I rang him on the weekend. He answered the phone, and I looked at him and he goes, whoa, 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 whoa.
No.
Andrew, is that you?
Anyway, I can now testament that Sony Ericssons don't like going through the centrifugal force of the front loader.
No, they're the cats.
No, really?
Oh. No, tell your story first.
Yours is sounding much more interesting. Yeah.
Yes, so same as the Nokia. Fair the same as the Nokia.
Yeah. But I did, once upon a time, she did put one of my Panasonic little handsets back in a 2G or something. It was about 5 or 6 years ago. She put that through the front loader as well. That survived. I found it underneath the clothesline.
Right.
So what's my phone doing here? Oh, I think it's been washed. You can tell because it's all fogged up on the window.
That's terrible. When it gets fogged up on the inside.
That's right. Yeah.
The fog off. It's always a bad sign.
So anyway, that was part one of my weekend. Then part two, my 6-year-old decided she was going to break a pen on my Wacom tablet, and they're about $200 to replace. So it was a fun weekend all round, really.
But technology failed you this weekend.
Absolutely. And then, of course, on Thursday, you know, I decided to rebuild a server because you can, and it works much better now. I'm very happy with that. But that's another story.
Oh, good.
Anyway, other interesting news this week. Hutchison's 3 in the broadband war for mobiles have actually brought their prices down yet again.
Again?
They're already pretty good.
$15 for 1 gig a month. That's not bad.
Can't argue with that.
They do have an option where you can get a mobile card and they contract you for 24 months. And I'm not 100% sure whether you can get that deal on an at-call basis or whether you've got to sign up for 24 months. So I suspect, knowing a deal like that, you're going to have to sign up and they're going to give you a card whether you like it or not. But still, $15 for a gig of data in is not all bad. In this day and age, in 12 months' time, that may be completely different because everyone's tending to go mobile broadband these days and we're becoming fairly data savvy.
How do I get around my dopey web pack that I've got with Three?
I'm on Cancel the... it.
I want access to data and I want to be able to browse on the phone and get email and do stuff, but they're charging me this ridiculously priced Webpack thing.
I know.
What is it, $5 for 10 meg or something?
Yeah, what you need to do, with that particular company, they have an X series range of mobile devices, such as PDAs and handheld devices, and those ones come with a bit more broadband. It's like what Telstra offer. Telstra offer a data sim. On a plan which you choose from. But there's another story too, actually.
I've just got the data. I've just got the voice plan.
Yeah. Yeah. So with a data sim, you can actually go and get a $0 voice plan with broadband on it with a package, and that'll serve your purposes.
Maybe that's what I need to do.
Go and pop that into your mobile device.
Except then they ping you high rates for your voice calls, don't they?
They do. Well, not high rates. They put, the real published rates that you see on websites for 35 cents for,
you have to pay those.
30 seconds and a 60 cent call cost. Well,
so that's all bad as well.
Yeah.
When you think it's
you need to
digital.
Be able to get both on the same SIM.
Correct. Yeah. Why can't I in the 21st century?
There should be a way to do it.
You can. You can. You just got to shop around and ask the right questions. I've come to a conclusion. So.
All right.
I'd set aside some time so you can go through it and have an attack at their customer service, ring them up and
And report back, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. There's an assignment for
an
you.
An assignment.
For
that particular company, I'm sure there'd be a way.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. You feel free to send us your experiences when it comes to these sorts of things too. Just an email in from Paul. Hello, Paul. He says, hey, I've been on the road filming all week and I've listened to all of years of podcasts on my Jazz Jam whilst driving between jobs. I think I read that correctly. I'm not sure. So why am I listening to the stream? I must be crazy. One question, all your voices sound greatly different on the stream compared to the podcast. Which one is more accurate?
Well, as the podcast producer, I'll say the podcast is fairly accurate.
I've never listened to the voices on the stream.
Do we sound different on the stream? Maybe we're thin. Maybe we're... Yes.
Yeah, probably just bandwidth issues, yeah.
Could
be. It's a little bit garbled.
Which stream, Paul?
Yes, tell us which stream you're listening to. That'd be very interesting to know.
And you'll also be listening to the unedited version on the stream, which could contain anything.
Really?
Yes.
What's on the stream? I've never heard this. Oh, no, the stream.
The stream.
I mean, podcast.
No, well, the stream could contain anything. The podcast's very heavily censored. And
absolutely.
And we
take out our mistakes.
Yes, the stream is much more entertaining, isn't it? Well, let's move on. Telstra on the trail of copper thieves. Now, this is fairly, high in the news. You hear it on the news these days about railway lines being put out of action because of missing cable and things like that.
Yeah, I was saying on the news that there was some, the police have been tracking them down too and
they've been
containers
doing some,
and exciting things.
Doing some excellent work on that front. So hopefully the Chinese semiconductor business is going to be, will probably come back and bite us on the bottom because all the prices will be dear because I have to pay top dollar for real copper rather than the stuff from the railways.
But the good side is that your trains aren't cancelled in the morning because the signal's shut down.
Absolutely right, but you would have paid twice as much for your MP3 player that you got in your ear because... They're not being subsidised by the Victorian or Australian railway system. But anyway,
it's like the three mobile plans. It's a delicate balance, isn't it?
It is.
Find a happy medium for everybody.
Well, anyway, copper theft. Apart from the railways, Telstra isn't immune either. Copper theft from telecommunications, power and transport infrastructure in Australia is rising as an exodus of investors from equities markets drive the price of metals to almost $4.40 a pound. I haven't worked that out in kilos or anything like that, but... a pound these days. How many kilos in a pound? Anyway.
It's about $2.50 in a pound, isn't there?
Something.
That's
wrong pound.
Wrong pound, sorry.
Oh, yeah. renewed interest in the commodities has pushed the price from less than $1 US in March to a high of $4 in March this year, but investors have not been alone in embracing the base metal. Police from the US and Britain have also reported surges. Absolute surges in thefts of copper. So,
hi, Serge.
I don't think we're... he's a good guy, Serge. Yes. He does good audio.
He does.
I don't think we're immune from it over here.
We're not. It's an international problem.
Yeah.
Yes. People are experiencing this everywhere. There's cables being stolen.
So if you're sitting at home in the rural parts of the countryside and you're having a chat on the phone and it goes dead and you've got no dial tone, chances are someone's nicked your copper.
Yeah.
Telstra Director of Corporate Security and Investigations, Jules Scarlett, said the situation in Australia was also worsening. The telco has had copper networks spanning the length and breadth of the country. Well, there's another reason why we should all go wireless. Don't need copper anymore.
True. The problem is you always need copper somewhere at the moment. We can't transfer energy without wires, can we? That's
well, we can, but yeah, not all that terribly efficiently, and we don't tend to do it.
That's right. We can send communication signals without wires, but at the end of the day, if we want to transfer energy, which is powering.
But are people going to nick things with high voltages through it?
Yes. But yes, because people are stupid.
Are they?
Yes.
What is it, though? Why do they nick...
It's called Darwinism.
Well, the theory of evolution going awfully wrong.
Yes, very much so. It's the theory of evolution going awfully right. It's these people removing themselves from the gene pool.
It is a theory of evolution going totally wrong because they're not succeeding in removing themselves. We're not finding them... You know, zapped on the train lines, they're actually succeeding in getting the copper out, which is really bad.
Because the other thing with copper is, obviously, it's a good earthing device too. So you would think in things like substations, there's going to have those big earthing straps and lightning rod type sort of things. And you're going to get pride hanging onto one of those if something goes awfully wrong. I'm surprised they haven't been hauling them out of substations, sort of, you know, those things you see on Doctor Who, you know, shadows etched on the walls of large environments and things.
Maybe this has been happening and no one's noticed that the people just completely vaporise themselves and
it's possible.
There's nothing left behind except a pair of shoes or something.
Anyway, so there you go. Watch your copper, everybody, if you've got some on your property. Copper fences and stuff like that. I must admit, I've got some hard-drawn copper at home I use for antennas. I wonder if that's probably worth a couple of... Oh, I shouldn't say that. There'll be people coming around looking
for them.
Oh, my goodness.
Scrap copper, Andrew.
Yes. All right. Also, in the news this week, let's change the tack of the show absolutely completely. Websites win the right to show games clips. Now, this is talking about the Olympic Games, which is coming up in China. Later this year. Despite the brouhaha with the torch that's going around at the moment, I don't know whether you saw that on the news, a couple of rugby tackles there in the UK as the torch is going past the Queen's home.
That was amazing. Protesters with fire extinguishers trying to put the thing out.
Yes.
What's the world coming to?
Well, anyway, if the Olympics do manage to go ahead with all the protests, and I'm sure they will, internet sites in Australia will be allowed to show short video clips of Olympic events for the first time during the Beijing Games, following a historic agreement announced just the other day between Channel 7 and the International Olympic Committee. So, because up until recently, it's a bit like Bernie Eccleston's Grand Prix, the Formula Ones. There's two feeds you have, one with a timer on it and one without, the clean and the dirty feed. And you can't put that anywhere. You can't use that. You've got to be very, very careful how you use it, especially if you're a broadcaster. And I think only news services can rebroadcast it. And this is the same with the Olympics. You've got to be very much on your toes as to where you can use footage from the Olympics. Otherwise, people will chase you and hunt you down. And solicitors will be sending... big concrete shoemakers around with you and all that sort of stuff.
The International Olympic Committee are one of those mobs that is very sharp on protecting their intellectual property rights in all kinds of areas. So, yeah, they're not people you want to cross in that regard.
So there we go. We might see some clips on... I don't know whether anyone can do it or what. I don't know what the story is behind it, but I guess there'll be a lot of enthusiastic website developers who follow sports and they'll grab little clips. And let's face it...
Yeah, presumably you'll still need to have a rights agreement of some kind, but at least they're going to have a way of getting it available.
And YouTube viewers too. They'll probably be inundated with these clips. Maybe they're just realising the inevitable. Maybe they're just going to come to the conclusion that it's going to hit YouTube and people are going to publish it and it's going to be so quick and you can't get it down. So let's just go with the flow and make it look, spin it around, turn it around so it works for us.
That's what they should do. They should look at it from the point of view that it's going to happen anyway. As you say, how can we facilitate it happening and how can we make some money out of it happening as well and retain some level of control and regulation?
Just an email in, GD, Jeff Dudley, has sent us one. His memory stick has been through the wash and dryer several times and still works. That's good, GD. I wonder what type of brand it was. We'll give it a plug, because that way we can go out there. I need memory sticks so I can walk across the street and get drowned in, and my wife can handle with care, and I know that they're not going to go astray, but there you go. Also, Paul's listening on the Windows stream, 40 kilobits per second. Your voices are deeper and not as sharp as on the ADSL, 7 gigabits. There you go.
Ooh. I'm not too stressed about my voice being deepened.
Aren't you? Well, that's good.
Neither am I.
Graham, Microsoft Open Office XML, now a standard. What do you think about this? Good, bad, indifferent? Two standards, one standard. Where are we?
Yeah.
it was going to happen because Microsoft were going to win one way or another, I think it's unfortunate that we needed another standard, because there was previously an XML standard for Office documents, which Microsoft then came out and created their own.
Is this the Samson and Goliath type sort of battle here happening? The people with the biggest, the deepest pockets and the biggest software development platforms have the ability to call the standards?
I think there's an element of that in there, yeah, and I think that's unfortunate. And I think the Europeans have done well in trying to at least get some control over it. But yes, inevitably Microsoft we're going to get their standard up, I think.
But don't you think that also it's going to be good for everybody? Because Microsoft is so well and truly entrenched in today's business community that you might as well have a standard which they agree with and they conform with and everybody else can toe the line. But well, if it's open, everyone should be able to just...
Everybody should. The problem is that some people say there are parts of this Office Open XML that aren't fully defined, that you can't follow unless you are Microsoft. Things that say format this the way Word 97 did it, and then they don't define how Word 97 did it.
Do you want to just briefly tell everybody what Open Office XML actually is?
Okay, it's a document format for storing things like Word documents or word processing documents, spreadsheets, those sorts of things, that stores in plain text using plain text tags to identify how the document should be formatted and what particular elements are. So you might have the same way, if you've ever looked at how you write web pages in HTML, you would write a word processing document in Office Open XML. In a similar format, you'd say, here's where you'd have a tag that says what follows is the header, and then you'd have the text of the heading.
So we're moving away from the proprietary file format. I think we've had Sarah from Microsoft in. She spoke about this recently in an interview, I think, last year.
Yeah, the old way of doing it was that it was a binary format.
And you could never read it in a plain text view or anything. But at least this way, if your file gets corrupted and you're in a big file, and let's face it, there's lots of big files out there in databases and spreadsheets, you'll at least be able to recover some of it. You won't lose all of it. And I think that's a really good...
That's a big part of it. It also means that it's much easier to search for, say, words within the documents. So if you want to search all the word processing documents and spreadsheets and other things on your system for the words Tech Talk Radio, it's much easier to do that if they're in a plain text XML type format rather than in a binary format. So it's going to improve.
How does it go with a virus or something like that? Because, you know, that's traditionally macros and things is how people used to send doc files and the likes in emails. Do you reckon Open Office is going to make that harder or easier?
I think it'll have negligible impact, because that part of the document that's a macro will still have to be the same format. It'll have to either be in uncompiled VB code, or it'll be a compiled binary format.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be no change to that part of the way it works, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I suspect it'll be just as vulnerable as it has been in the past. Maybe a little bit more, because people will know how the document format works, and perhaps a little bit less because the good guys know how the document format works as well, so it'll be a lot more transparent. So I think that'll balance out.
Adam Turner has an opinion on this, as he does with everything. Not that we're going to go to View to the Couch right now. Just the email he's just sent, which says, Graham's right, it's not really open. Do you agree?
That's what I believe from what I've read, that there are parts of it that are not fully open, which is most unfortunate.
Which makes you
particularly when we already had
something that was
OpenOffice.org's format, which was open completely.
Mm. So which part of it's not open?
Well, the part that says format this like Word 97 did it.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not fully defining how Word 97 did it, because you only know that if you're Microsoft. And
so why don't we call
Microsoft really need that, because they really need the backwards compatibility. They really need that if you've created a document in Word 97, that you can import that into the new format and it'll still look the same. Well, that's why Microsoft are upset and can't use the old format, because they need to keep that compatibility.
Why don't we call it POXML? Partly Open XML.
Yes, well...
Is that be good? That be more beneficial?
It might be more truth in advertising, yes.
Well, let's ponder that, and when we come back, we'll hear Adam's view from the couch tonight about implants of all things.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, in 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus have again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPad.
Eddie's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking for the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service. Just on a, how does it go? It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Back to Tech Talk Radio, wherever you may happen to be listening to us around Australia, around the world, whether you're on the stream, the World Wide Web, or listening to us on the podcast, going to work in the loop as we get train travellers from in the UK on the tube. We've got some listeners there who listen to us. Pretty amazing when you think about the technology, isn't it?
Adam Turner's an Aerosmith fan. I didn't know that.
Didn't you?
No.
That'll make no sense to anyone who's listening to the podcast
now. Send Adam your pirated Aerosmith album.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, Dr. Ron, tell us about, you did some research from some of the comments coming up last week about cell information in mobile phone base stations, of all things.
Firstly, yeah, I was going to talk about RDS. You mentioned that on your new mobile phone, the new Sony Ericsson, you were
the
getting
clean one.
The clean one, the one that works,
yes.
That you get the radio station information when you're listening to your FM radio.
I do.
It tells you says
what station you're listening to.
That's a system called RDS, which is a radio...
An acronym for what?
It's a acronym for radio... I'm looking here in my notes. You'd think I'd have that, wouldn't you? Radio data system. Radio broadcast data system.
Just make it up if we go.
Okay, well, that's the official name used for the US
radio
version.
Data system.
Yeah, I did a quick wiki on it. There is a digital signal which is broadcast along with the analog audio signal.
Mm-hmm.
And not only... There's actually standards, so not only can it provide you with information about the station you're listening to,
yep.
It can also provide you with... traffic information.
Who provides this information?
The actual station itself. So it sets up the radio transmitter up on the mountain.
Does it?
Yeah, and they actually transmit...
It's very clever.
Yeah, at the same time, they can send you other information. And they can send you text information so it can scroll across your display. So if it's... that sort of thing. Look, it's been in Europe and the UK for like 10 years or more, but we're just starting to awaken to this amazing technology down under, aren't we? So, yes, now the sinister thing, have a listen to this. In addition, RDS is being proposed as the data transmission protocol in California's pioneering Programmable Communicating Thermostat Program.
What?
This would allow signals from the state or utility to offset temperature settings during grid price events or completely override occupant temperature set points during emergency events. The technology can be extended to other home electricity consuming devices such as hot water heaters, clothes dryers, dishwashers and pool pumps.
Hang on a minute. The government wants to turn my heating on and off.
Yes.
And pool pump.
Yeah.
Can't get the pool pump.
I'm a pool
this
pump.
Is the technology is being pump. Considered for this. So if you're what would happen is your radio would be hooked up to your climate control in your car. So if there's some sort of emergency event and they want you to save petrol or something or turn off your air conditioner, they can send a signal over the radio for your climate control computer to be changed remotely.
Why your car? You're talking pool pumps. You want one at home, wouldn't you?
Well, you'd have to. You'd have to. This is what they're talking about for where this technology could be used. The hope is that consumption of electricity can be thus rationed as an alternative to building more generation capacity.
On the other hand, I have a pair of side cutters.
And you can.
I've got a wife.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. That's RDS from one extreme to the other, essentially.
Fantastic. And what else did you have? You had something else there, follow-up from last week,
I had another follow-up about laser pointers.
Oh, yeah, because there's been some... You wouldn't want to be flying into Sydney at the moment.
No.
Watch out for those green lights in the cockpit.
Did you hear that story on the news?
I did.
Where there's been a spate of attacks on aircraft. There's been idiots on the ground shining green laser pointers into planes that are trying to land at Sydney Airport.
Now, Jeff Dudley sent us some stuff through about this the other day. He's one of our avid listeners.
Yeah.
And they're going to try and ban laser pointers over a certain level if they haven't done it already.
Indeed.
Stop them being imported.
Indeed. I'll tell you how the legislation stands here where we are in Victoria, Australia.
Oh, so it's not uniform?
Oh, no.
I thought the aviation people would be federal, but no, this is a state-by-state regulation,
well,
is it?
There's an act of...
Like fireworks, you can buy them in Canberra.
Indeed. There's an act of Parliament called the Control of Weapons Act in this state. What they're doing in terms of banning imports, that's federal. They're looking at making it like some sort of prohibited import, so that will cover everybody. But each state has its own legislation in regards to weapons. And a laser pointer is actually considered to be a prohibited weapon in Victoria.
In Victoria.
Which means you can't actually own one anywhere, unless you've got a permit, if the output power of the laser is greater than 1 milliwatt.
Now, I asked you this question in advance. How do you get a permit for a laser pointer?
You did ask me that question.
And you said you were going
to
find out.
You have to write to the minister. You have to ask the minister for laser pointers, I think.
This is only for the big ones. The little ones that you just use to point at your PowerPoint screen, you can use the below 1 milliwatt ones, yeah?
If it's below 1 milliwatt, Graham, that's correct.
Okay.
But if you have one of the early ones, which are like the whopping great big 5 milliwatt monster ones.
Yeah.
Really?
Or if you buy a new one, which is in excess of 1 milliwatt, you need to have a permit. You have to have a good reason to have it.
I don't want to catch you in the hop here, but what about other states? Are they following the same line when it comes to permits and laser pointers?
Look, this legislation has been in place in Victoria since 1990, and the regulations which control or determine what is prohibited and what's a controlled weapon and other classes of weapons, those regulations have been in since 2000. So for the last 8 years, this has been legislated in Victoria. I don't know about the other states.
But it all comes down to catch me if you can, because I haven't found the guys in Sydney that have been doing it.
This is the thing, they've got to catch them, and New South Wales police haven't caught them yet. What they're hoping to do with the new federal legislation is to stop these things being imported or ordered over the internet or what have you.
Oh, well, there you go. So if you've got a 1 milliwatt or greater laser pointer in some parts of Australia, you're in trouble. Don't use it.
Yeah, the law...
If it melts your whiteboard at the school, then there's a problem.
The law says it's a handheld battery-operated article, commonly known as a laser pointer, designed or adapted to emit a laser beam with an accessible emission limit of greater than 1 milliwatt. So if it's up to 1 milliwatt, you're okay. Greater than 1 milliwatt.
Yeah.
Hand it into your local police station, I guess.
Absolutely.
Not allowed to have one.
Dr. Ron, does anything get under your skin these days?
In what
we had
context?
This discussion not long when JD, one of our regular Apple gurus, was in about, and you came up with the correct medical term for having something underneath your skin.
Subcutaneous.
Subcutaneous.
Yes.
Yes. What about a mobile phone under your skin? Would you think that'd be good? It's a bit like, you know,
Where does the SIM card go?
Well, yes. All these questions
are
more.
What are you laughing at?
It raises a lot of questions. Adam Turner took a look at this from his view from the... What did you call it?
From the subcutaneous couch.
That's the one.
Adam Turner's view from the couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Fancy a mobile phone embedded in your body? When Martin Cooper invented the mobile phone 35 years ago, he envisioned a world with people so wedded to wireless connections that they would walk around with devices embedded in their bodies. We're certainly wedded to our mobile gadgets, but are we ready for embedded devices? There's obviously lots of benefits to having your phone under your skin. For starters, you'll never leave it at home or lose it on the bus. It could also draw power from your body, so you wouldn't need to worry about recharging it. There's always the danger that muggers will start chopping off people's arms to steal their phones. But it shouldn't be hard to design the phones with some kind of biometric authentication so they only work for you. There are plenty of medical applications for such a device. Imagine having your phone connected to your pacemaker so if your heart stops, an ambulance is called straight away. You could cut back on regular checkups if your body could automatically keep the doctor updated on your medical conditions. There's obviously health issues to deal with, such as radiation exposure. The question as to whether mobile phones give you cancer has been in the news again recently, with a leading Australian neurosurgeon claiming our favourite gadgets are more dangerous than asbestos or smoking. A year ago, I thought the link between phones and cancer had been quashed for good by the results of a large Danish survey. Danish researchers found no link between cancer and long or short-term mobile phone use during a 20-year study of 420,000 mobile phone users. It's getting hard to know who to believe. I think the biggest hurdle the subdermal mobile phone needs to overcome is the interface. Without a screen and a keypad, you're back to the old days when a phone was just a phone. Advances in voice recognition and natural language query will eventually let us do away with the keyboard, but we'll need computers to read back the answers to our queries, unless we want to hardwire our eyeballs into our phones. Of course, there's always talk of connecting the phone straight into your brain, but this will be the stuff of science fiction for a long time yet. Even then, I'm not sure it's such a good idea. It would be too easy to accidentally call people. It's bad enough calling out the wrong name during sex without actually ringing them as well. I think it's inevitable that we'll eventually have phones and other devices embedded in our bodies, but I don't think your average punter is ready to become a cyborg just yet. In the long run, though, resistance is futile.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Next, they'll be putting your Met card underneath or your public transport card underneath your skin so that you don't have to, you never lose it.
Like those recharge chips that you put in your cat so that you can scan your cat.
You take the cat to Safeway to find out whose kitty this is.
I left my mobile phone at home on the weekend when I went out. They did quite deliberately because I just started transferring podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And the ETA on the podcast transfer was about 25 minutes, and I thought, oh, I've got to go out for an hour or so. I'll just go out and I'll leave it at home, let it transfer. And
didn't get washed, did it?
No, it was locked away safely in Shack West, so yep. There was no interference.
But I feel quite all at sea when I go out without my mobile.
It was a bit of an odd feeling. I haven't done it for a while. There were times when I thought I went to check that it was there and it wasn't. That's a bit odd. I haven't got my phone with me. But it didn't worry me too much. It was only an hour or so, but maybe if it was a bit longer, I would have got a bit more antsy.
Yes, we've actually spoken about this on the show from time to time, of people becoming so technically, like internet-wise, you've got to be on the internet, it's becoming a mental disorder. We've spoken about that, I think, about two or three shows back.
Speaking of mental disorders, we're going to talk about Facebook and Twitter a bit later.
Oh, are we? Okay.
You're still on about that, by the way.
We've put more follow-up, more research that we've done
from
last week's show. Yeah.
But in the meanwhile, let's talk about an article that I found in one of the local newspapers here in Melbourne over the weekend. How to be king of your domain and others and make a killing. Now, we've spoken about things like this before in respect to cybersitting, you know, where people would register a domain name or a misspelling of a trademark or a company brand and things like that. Well, Australian internet entrepreneurs are raking in millions of dollars a year by spotting the true value of what's in a name. The practice of buying up unused names known as domain parking is estimated to be worth more than $1 billion a year worldwide, and Australia sees it as a growing market for those with an eye for a dollar. Now, if you've got a crystal ball, and you want to, you know, think of a trademark, a brand name or something which is yet to be registered, yet to be invented, and I've looked for 4.com.au and it's been taken, you can get out here and you can buy the domain. And then what they do is they put those stupid little ads on there where you actually, you know, you type in something and you go to the wrong domain and it says, oh, you must be looking for this, and you put a Google ad on there. And they make money off those ads with the impressions. Mm-hmm. So if you've got enough of those domains bought and parked, and having these funny little ads on them, you can actually sit there and churn it in, you know, the dollars that is. And then, of course, when someone does come along and they want the domain that you've got registered, well, then you can sell it for the highest bidder or, the, you know, whatever mutually agreeable amount of money that you feel fit to pay. Because at the end of the day, no one owns a domain name. You rent it from, it's a database entry in a big database somewhere in Australia, auda.org.
And you own the rights to that entry,
don't you? That's right. So what are you going to do?
For a given length of time, yeah.
So you feel the urge to go and register 10,000 domains and put stuff up online. And I guess if you're that way inclined and you've got cash to burn, it's probably a good way of earning a few bucks.
You're right, if you had a crystal ball and had some insight into what a large corporate was going to be doing. We've spoken in the past about if someone had the wherewithal 10 years ago to register the domain itunes.com. yeah, or similar sorts of names, you'd be a multi-bajillionaire now, wouldn't you?
Someone did with Firefox, if I recall. You know, the browser?
Oh, yeah.
Because if you go to firefox.com, it says you've got to go to get Firefox, and thanks to someone or other. I don't know whether it's still up. It might be, it might not be, but...
Interesting.
They're accidental hero type sort of things.
Yeah.
Domainers, as they are calling themselves, spot generic and popular names that have not been turned into websites and register them for as little as $7 US. They cram them with advertisements and watch them as they earn a few cents a hit. Big bucks when you've got a portfolio of tens of thousands. Now, unlike cybersitting, where people infringe trademarks fraudulently to obtain traffic, domainers say they're just supplying people with information.
Yeah, cyber squatters we used to call them.
Yeah. Depends which side of the fence you want to sit on, really, isn't it?
You could look at them as pests, or you could look at them as entrepreneurs.
Well, it's quite annoying when you actually go to a domain and you leave the .au off and you end up on something and it says...
Well, you type too fast for your keyboard and you type in google.com.au if you're wanting to
now,
find
a search.
Now,
is that cyber-sitting, cyber-squatting, or is that domain being an entrepreneur?
I think what it is depends on what's been done with it. I think if you put something there that's... intentionally trying to steal traffic from the site that's been mistyped,
yes,
then that might be
if you
put something, you know,
if you put in, say, a banking acronym for a bank which they haven't registered,
yeah,
and they put up a fake homepage that looks just like the bank's,
yeah, then you'd certainly call that
that's cyber squatting. There's an element of unlawfulness about it.
Yeah,
really.
and cyber squatting also tends to have an element of holding that domain to ransom to sell it to its, what would otherwise be its rightful owner.
Well, I think they'd do that with these domains, yeah, too. They're not going to sell it. I don't think they'll be selling it for $7.50.
No. So it might depend on the way in which the domain is handled, what you'd call it. But, yeah.
All right, XP, the wonderful Windows operating system, has been given a reprieve until 2010. Maybe later, Microsoft has announced it will extend the OEM, which is what the manufacturers put there. Yeah. That's the version that goes on your machine when you buy it from, say, a...
Yes, so as a computer manufacturer, we can still supply machines with Windows XP on.
Yeah.
Well, now, why would we want to do that? Oh, yeah, because everyone hates Vista.
That's right. That's why. That's the reason.
Yeah.
So it's going to be end of life, is it, in 2010?
2010. They're going to keep the availability up until June 30th, 2010, but there is a catch. As with normal, these
always a catch.
It's going to be like digital television, isn't it?
The reprieve only applies to XP installed on ultra-low-cost PCs, and there's an acronym that goes with that, ULCPCS.
Oh, good.
I'd stick with the full version, actually, if we'll know what they are. Microsoft General Manager of Windows Client Product Management described these products as companion devices with limited hardware compatibilities.
So these are machines like the $100 laptop that sells for $200.
That's them. Smaller screens, lower power processors, and which are cheaper than the more expensive PCs. So. What about Windows 7? Which is scheduled for release,
Can't wait to see it. It's supposed to be a completely different direction altogether.
And it's not far off, is it? It's 12 months. But then again, they said that about it. Vista, wasn't it? That was
I installed Vista Service Pack 1 on my boss's laptop.
Someone did here too. I saw an email come in. Yeah, what happened?
Nothing.
What do you mean, nothing?
Yeah, it's just the same.
Not faster, not slower?
Nah, it still sucks, yeah.
Oh. Ooh.
Ooh.
Sorry.
Ooh. I've got an email here from, not sure who it is, from MyBar. XP faster, great. I have a new top-of-the-line laptop that is 2 weeks old. XP is good leg up to the thoughts of turning it into an Apple Mac. After hearing about SP3 from Tech Talk Radio 2 weeks ago, I logged on to Microsoft site in the quest to download it, but they give you two options. Option 1, 57.5 meg download. Option 2, 16.1 meg. I've tried both, but I keep getting the error. The expected version of this product was not found on your system. That's going to be a problem, surely.
Mm. Don't know what's going on there.
Anyway, XP Service Pack 3. That's
which is still only in beta, by the way. So
it's got to be good.
Only do it if you're doing it on a test system.
Mm. Oh, yes. I can wholeheartedly concur with those thoughts. Mm. Yes, beta things.
On the other hand, on the test systems, it seems to be looking like it's going to be a good thing. So
I hope so. XP is good. Damn good. Nice and stable.
XP is a good operating system.
Works very fast. Everything runs on
this
it.
This is the problem with Vista. In an otherwise, ideal world, Vista might not look so bad, but because XP is so good and Vista isn't as good, we're really resistant to it.
Well, if you walk into some of the retailers these days, you can still buy laptops with XP loaded up on them.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that's, testimony.
Well, that was customer demand. For a while there, you couldn't, and people absolutely demanded it. I think
Dell was one of the first manufacturers to roll back to XP or give their consumers or customers the option.
And a lot had to follow as well. So,
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Graham Kelly and Andrew McCollum will be back with more in a moment.
listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Andrew McComb and Graham Callaghan in this evening, talking all things technologically sounding like. And yes, Dr. Ron, we're trying to get the birthday cake done here, but the breaks are just too short at the moment, aren't they?
We need longer chocolate cake breaks.
Absolutely. Who did the rundown tonight?
Yeah.
Oh, well, sorry, I should have put a birthday cake track mix in. But anyway.
It's quite all right.
Last week or the week before on the show, I sort of announced that Mozilla Firefox is about to go live with their current version, but they've actually changed their mind, or else I got it wrong, one of the two.
Oh.
Mozilla Firefox have unleashed Beta 5. They're having a fifth go at the new version of Firefox, which is the world's alternate browser to...
Yep, this will be Firefox version 3.
Yeah, version 3, beta 5.
Yep.
So the foundation has released the latest beta, which includes more than 750 alterations and fixes.
Yep.
No wonder my beta 2 never worked. the new beta includes fixes for memory problems that have been plaguing users, as well as blocking systems that will prevent the showing of pages that are known to be forgeries. Anti-malware code is also being built in, and parents will have the option of blocking certain contact. You just got to make sure the kids don't get there and override it, because that was one of the whole things. Remember the net process that the Australian government tried to roll out?
Mm.
Yeah, the kids just turned
net
off.
Net alert.
That's it. Mm. Yeah. Other improvements include automatically shutting down of outdated and insecure plugins, and easily removal of third-party applications. The new browser is expected to go out on final release in June, but Mozilla is adamant that it will not be tied down to a release schedule if it means putting out buggy code. Well, there's something to behold from a manufacturer's point of view.
Yes, it's kind of the opposite to what we get from certain other software companies.
Yes, I guess so.
So they have to stick to their release date, whether it's ready or not.
But then again, everyone has the ability to do an update to their system. I don't mean from a consumer point of view, I mean from a manufacturer's point of view, because we talk about service packs from Microsoft, we talk about, even Apple do it with their versions of 10.5.3 or whatever they're up to at the moment.
And even Firefox, I mean, it might come out, and there will still be lots and lots of updates for it ongoing, because that's the nature of software these days. It's just too complex.
Absolutely.
To be able to have something that doesn't change. But, it's a commitment by the project, and bearing in mind that this is mostly written by, a community of programmers that, mostly volunteers, so...
Well, that's it, open source, isn't it?
Open source.
Difference between Microsoft and Google, probably the two largest well-known computer companies in the world, is that Microsoft has made most of their money and has most of their customers based on proprietary software.
Yep.
Whereas, on the other hand, you've got Google, who is also a fairly affluent company, and they've done the same on open source, which means it doesn't cost anything.
Hmm.
They must have a lot of Linux boxes in their server room, that's all I can say.
You would assume so.
Yes.
You'd hope so. You'd hope that Google wasn't powered by a whole racks full of IIS servers.
I'd be pretty confident that it's not.
As a web developer, I must admit, I'm a bit scared about all these changes in Firefox. What's my website going to look like now? There's got to be some form of backward compatibility, I would hope, so that they all look the same. As I was saying to you, Dr. Ron, they all look different in every other browser.
Yeah, you just write HTML code and it all looks the same in every web browser the world over, doesn't it?
Bubba.
It'd be nice if it worked that way. I'm looking forward to the new version of Firefox. We're all Firefox users here.
Yeah.
It's a great... alternative web browser.
And you see it more and more on just ordinary users' PCs too. It's not just the tech heads that have Firefox these days. A lot of people are installing Firefox on their computers.
I'm installing it on computers when I get people let me loose on them, and I say, look, if this is a new computer, download this web browser, set it up as your default web browser, and use it, see if you like it. If you don't, just switch it off, go back to Internet Explorer or whatever else has come with the operating system, but give this a go.
I love the sync option. It's a plugin that you can get off. You just look for the plugins on Google and Google Sync, which means it takes all your Like we've talked about social networking sites doing this beautifully,
like Delicious.
But you can also get it done in the browser. So you can have a central repository like your Gmail account where you just upload your browsers and then you go to the office and they download.
And the big advantage of what you're talking about is that it means that your favourites on your work machine and your home machine are the same. So if you add a machine to your favourites at home and you go to your favourites in Firefox at work, it's going to be there, isn't it?
Exactly. And you can even have the last five or the last web pages you had open. When you close it down, it opens up at work in the same fashion. It's great.
That's a good idea, isn't it? So you shut down the browser at work,
and go home, and you pick up where you left off.
And all the tabs open with everything how you had it. Mm. What's that plugin called? That's a good idea.
Sync, Google Sync.
Google Sync.
Google Sync on Google Sync, and you'll see what it is.
It's good. Good little plugin. That one up. What a great idea.
All right, an SMS in. Jason. Hello, Jason. He SMS'd 0430582077. You can do this when we're not on air, too. We read them out the next week. He says, just discovered the station tonight and moved to Mitcham, which is a suburb of Melbourne, in November, and enjoying the show very much. Thank you, Jason.
Hi, Jason.
Lovely to have you on board. There you go.
Yep. I just did the experiment, by the way. If you type Firefox Sync into Google, it comes up top result Google Browser Sync.
Does it say much about it there, or it just takes you through to the download page or something?
It takes you through to the product page at Google, Google Browser Sync for Firefox is an extension that continuously synchronizes your browser settings, including bookmarks, history, persistent cookies, and saved passwords across your computers.
Can you say that any faster?
All right. And it's got a really nice install now thing, so it makes it very easy for you. So just type Firefox Sync into Google, and it comes up top result.
Let's talk about Apple, shall we? Apple fixes some critical QuickTime flaws. Now, QuickTime, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, plays movie files.
And audio files and other multimedia.
MP3s and all that sort of stuff. If you've ever been to the Apple movie trailer download site, no doubt you'll be watching them on QuickTime.
If you've ever installed any Apple product, you've probably been forced to install QuickTime as well, too.
Oh, here we go.
Never mind.
Have you put your Safari on yet, Graham?
Yes, I've got Safari.
Did you check the box or did it do it for
you?
Well,
I already had Safari, so I didn't get it foisted upon me.
Foisted, yes. And it is a lot of foisting. If you've ever actually put iTunes on your machine, that little thing, and I can't remember the process, Bonjour. That runs on your PC the feisting software of which Graham's talking about, and there's a new box which just comes automatically pre-checked for you. You don't have to do anything apart from click OK.
Mm.
For those people who go, damn, what's this box on the screen?
Well,
click, click, click.
It installs Apple's web browser on your Windows machine.
No, that's not a bad thing.
But the fact that it does it for you...
That's
without,
the bad thing.
Yeah, automatically, without you intending to have done it. Yeah.
Some of these installers do that as well, and they say... Would you like to install this application with normal settings and then it has recommended for most users? Mm. Or would you like to set it up with custom settings recommended for advanced users only? I think most people would just say, oh, just go with the regular settings and all the stuff just gets installed. You don't even see the options there with checkboxes in front of you.
Yeah, one of my pet hates is the toolbars that get installed that way. MSN's toolbar gets installed that way. Google's toolbar in particular gets installed that way by a lot of people.
Mm.
It comes with the Java client. It comes with Adobe Reader and things like that. It's very frustrating to me that this happens.
Now, what is Safari? Is that a web browser?
Safari is a web browser. It's like Internet Explorer or Firefox that we were just talking about, but it's the one that Apple wrote for their Apple Macintosh operating system, for Leopard and so on, for OS X. And it's been ported to run on Windows.
Ooh. Fairly fast, they claim, too, but then again... I haven't tested it yet. I haven't checked the box. Let's get back to the Apple fixes the QuickTime flaw, which is what we were originally talking about. The update addresses 11 vulnerabilities in the multimedia player software, 9 of which could be exploited by an attacker to remotely execute code on a target system, which is pretty much the way they all get in these days. So it just pays to make sure you update your QuickTimes as well.
Absolutely.
Other things on your machine.
And we're not being... on this topic, I'm not being critical of Apple. Any product can have security flaws in it. And,
this is a classic example of cross-all platforms. All flaws are affected by Windows XP, and the Mac OS X system. So,
I know if you've got QuickTime on your system, and odds are you do, go to the Apple website and update it.
Hey, did you know that Macs are the easiest to hack?
No.
Yeah. No, you read everything you find on the internet. According to PC World, Australian PC World for that matter, an article come up by recently about Mac at the easiest to hack says a $10,000 winner. Security researcher Charlie Milner exploited Safari in 2 minutes.
Oh.
The security researcher who walked away with US$10,000 last week by hacking a MacBook Air in less than 2 minutes said he chose to attack Apple's operating system for one simple reason. It was the easiest one of the three.
Well, that's interesting.
It is interesting. Would have thought that a Windows operating system would be the easiest.
I think that was in the newsletter too. Go and click the link on the newsletter for those that have subscribed to them. You can see that link there. It was fairly popular today.
I'll go and read that later on, yeah. But that's interesting.
Yeah, so that was...
On the other hand, Apple's operating system these days, underneath, it's just like OpenBSD. It's just a Unix-style operating system.
What's OpenBSD?
It's another Unix-style...
You use the acronym.
I can't remember what it stands for. It's another one of these open source Unix-like operating systems, similar to Linux that we talk about quite often.
How many flavors of this open source stuff is there?
Oh, yeah, gazillions.
Okay, good. Barclay something.
Yeah,
Debian.
I'll have it up in a minute. No.
Apple sued over inferior Mac display. Did you hear about this?
Apple sued over...
I'm not picking on Apple,
I've got much. That's all right.
The next one's Google being sued, but we'll talk about Apple being sued.
Yeah.
A few days after Apple had settled a court case over the MacBook and the MacBook Pro displays, news comes of another plaintiff making a similar allegation about the 20-inch iMac. Texas resident Chandra Sanders is suing Apple in the U.S. District Court of San Jose, claiming that the company engaged in deceptive marketing by overstating the capabilities of the desktop computer's display. The 24-inch iMac uses a high-quality display capable of displaying 24-bit color. Each pixel is made up of 3 subpixels. That's a dot of light on the screen for those interested.
Yep. Red, green, and blue.
Yep, each with the ability to show 256 levels of red, green, or blue. And that's 8 bits in each. 256 to the power of 3 is rather more than 16 million, hence the term millions of colors. However, the 20-inch uses a lesser panel, then only uses 6 bits per subpixel, or 64 levels. So as a result, you know, it's only 262,144, well short of the millions of, you know, colours. So as a result, off to the court.
Yes, quite rightly too, I think.
So there you go. Misleading advertising. It's not millions of colours. Yes. Google sued for invasion of privacy. Dr. Ron, you mentioned this on the news too.
Mm.
So a Pennsylvanian couple decided because their house...
Mr. and Mrs. Boring.
Yeah. It is too. It is too. Sorry, I just
checked the date on it to make sure it was an April Fool's Day article, but I think it's legitimate.
Yes, the couple in the US, Mr. and Mrs. Boring, is having a go at Google because their home's in the Street View website. A lawyer for these guys entered the private driveway to take pictures for the site, which uses Street View levels of city maps.
Mm.
Really, what's the world coming to when you can't even have your own home put up on Google?
So they're saying that the little Google robot, like the little bomb disposal robot, crawled up their driveway and started taking photographs.
Yeah.
And,
crawled up their driveway.
Yeah.
The guys go around in cars with these 3D cameras on them.
Oh,
have you seen them?
Oh, goodness me. Yes, and took photographs, and the robot thingy photographer was trespassing.
Happened in Melbourne and Sydney over Christmas, apparently, or more that should be allegedly.
Allegedly.
And haven't seen any sign of it yet on Street View. If you go to maps.google.com and go to something like San Francisco, Palo Alto, go and check out Lid's place. I won't give you her address, but, you know, she's over there. By the way, she's not on the show tonight. She's off to the RSA convention.
Where is Mad Lid? Oh, good.
She's going to do some field work. She's going to ask people like Eugene Kaspersky what's going on with his stuff, because they're off to Also, the National Association of Broadcasters is happening in Las Vegas at the moment, too. I was speaking to a colleague of mine who's probably somewhere over the Pacific Ocean as we speak, heading over there for shows like that. So lots to come out of in technological coming out of the States very shortly. But
you heading there?
No. I've been there on a few occasions now, and the main provider that I use is not exhibiting there at the moment. So I figured, well, stay here. Maybe one year. I'll use it as an excuse. Oh, my goodness. Is that the time?
You're listening to
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to Tech Talk Radio. Mobile internet devices click with users. The mobile market, the market for mobile internet devices is set to explode over the coming years, according to a panel of analysts at the Intel Development Forum in Shanghai.
Good.
These little suckers, brand new platform, the MIDs is what I'm trying to say, are a brand new platform that is expected to see rapid adoption as it fills the gaps between laptops and smartphones.
This is what we need.
It's like a PDA or something? Or?
Yeah, this is what we need. We need mobile internet devices. We need to get out of the mindset of buying mobile telephones. We don't need mobile telephones. We need mobile internet connectivity. And we need to be able to have voice applications running on those devices.
Hmm. It'll be the end of the phone plan, I reckon, as we know. It'll
and so it should be. It should just be one plan where you pay for a certain amount of data, and it's going to include voice, and it's going to include all other applications as well.
Hmm. This is because the necessary infrastructure... one analyst even predicted that the MID market would grow faster than the overall mobile sector because the necessary infrastructure is already in place.
It is.
And how true is that?
Yeah.
Everyone's got it absolutely everywhere at the moment, well, especially the 3G stuff, except some people have it everywhere you don't want it. But nonetheless, well, interesting to see if I get a phone call back over that. So, mobile internet devices, very much going to be the way of the future, and I guess the young kids of today too, they're fairly big on those sort of things.
They're getting smaller and smaller, and they're getting lighter and lighter, which is good. If you think about the first... types of PDAs and smartphones that came out. Think about those early Nokia bricks, like the Nokia 9000s and those sorts of model devices. I used to have a Nokia 9000. Do you remember that thing? It was like a house brick. And you look at these days at the new, like the Titan, the new HTC models. They're so much smaller, lighter, compact. The battery lasts 10 times longer. And
do you remember my first mobile phone?
I reckon that I do, you know. Was it a Motorola?
It was.
It was a bag phone.
A Motorola bag phone.
You carried
phone.
It in a bag. What was yours, Andrew? Yours was a car NEC. Phone, wasn't it? You had an NEC one in your car.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that, if I remember. Yeah, I had old clunkers, the old 700 meg things.
I had a Telecom Traveller P.
Did you?
Hmm. That was too big for a bag.
Was it?
Had a handle.
Did it?
Oh, one of the big ones, yeah.
I remember Graham's one, the bag phone. We were all excited because it zipped up in a bag and you could carry it over your shoulder.
Speaking of funny things like bags over your shoulder, can I tell you something? I just want to share this with you because I was surfing around looking for stories for the web for the show on the web in the last couple of days, and I came across one that says Windows source code has been released.
Now,
this is an April Fool's one, which I thought was really quite funny. And I did have a bit of a read about
it. I'd almost believe that. I'd almost believe that someone was stupid enough to let it slip and it was out in the wild.
Now, this has been, on one of the social networking sites, this has been dug or delicious or whatever you call it.
It's quite been dug.
Quite a bit.
Now, I dug.
The source code is up there, but it looks like source code, but it's actually quite funny to read. And it goes along the lines of something like initialize total new features equals 3. This is for Windows Vista.
Right.
Initialize total working new features, 0. And it looks like it's all been written in source
looks
code.
It looks like computer code. Yeah.
Float number of bugs equals 3,458 by e to the power of 8. Boolean ready for release equals false. As you move down, void main while crashed. If first time installed, if installed RAM is less than 2 gigabytes, processor speed less than 2 gigabytes, message, hardware incompatibility error. Okay, then there's I'll omit a fair bit of this. Gets down to the bottom there. Then they've commented out a few lines, says print, welcome to Windows 2000. And they've commented out the next line, which says welcome to Windows XP. And then they've got print, welcome to Vista.
Yes.
And down the very bottom.
Are you sure this is a joke?
This is down the very bottom, and I'm cutting a long story short here. It says check user license. Double check user license. This is, you know, like a routine if you're any familiar with things like these.
These are messages I see every day.
Then triple check user license and then relay user's details to Redmond is the fourth line of that. And then the final part, which I thought was really quite funny, display fancy graphics as a routine, followed by flicker LED hard drive as a routine. Make flash.
Yes.
And then finally it has run Windows XP. As the last routine to run there, so
very good.
And then the very bottom line says return equals lots more money. That's a computer gag. That's a gag for those who write software and the likes, which I thought was quite humorous.
We'll have to post that on the forum, Andrew. That's a good one.
Yeah, I came across that. I had a bit of a chuckle when I read it. I thought, is this for real? Doctor, on Facebook. You're going to tell us a little bit about your Facebook death of emails and the likes like that?
I wrote a blog post. I got motivated a couple of days ago, so I got a new blog post up on www.doctoron.com.au. It says, yes, Twitter and Facebook and death to email. Lid inspired me last week to have a bit of a play around with Twitter
which is a social networking system.
Yeah.
Graham was also playing with Twitter, and he actually signed up and got his mobile phone, everything registered while we're on air last week.
He did.
And then failed completely to update it for a week. So,
you're still on air. Well, it's true. See, it goes round.
Mm.
I tried to add you to follow you on Twitter, and it said a request has been sent to Graham for permission, and that request got lost in the system somewhere. But that's okay.
No, as soon as I signed in, it asked me to authenticate you, but yes.
And that was tonight, 8 minutes before we went to air. Right.
That's right.
That's okay. Now, I had a play around
with Twitter. With you with Facebook the other day, but that's for another show.
Well, she said that it wasn't for her. She said it was too complex, and you had to log in, and there were too many overheads. And I looked at Twitter, and I thought, well, the same thing in reverse, I guess. It's too Spartan. There's not enough there. The 100.
You don't like social networking via SMS?
Well, no, the social networking via SMS is very good. Facebook does it, but Facebook doesn't offer it in Australia. Twitter does offer it in Australia, so that's a good thing, I guess, in Twitter's favour. But if you want to send a personal message to someone else on Twitter, you're limited to 140 characters. So if I want to type a message, like I might type a standard email to you, Andrew, explaining about something that's coming up on the show, I'd have to send 4 or 5 messages and have to break it up because of the character restriction. It's doing my head in. I guess my the summary that I put at the end of that article there is, look, Twitter, use it if you want to use it. I'm not going to use it because it doesn't do what I want it to do. But what I thought was good was that where you have status updates, whether you're using Twitter...
What's a status update? Whether you're online or
what
offline,
you're doing,
in the library or in
the
bathroom?
Or the fact that you don't have one at all. You can just not have a status update. Just to say that, look, you're available, but you're not actively updating things. Whether it's Twitter or Bebo is another one we haven't talked about. Facebook, MySpace, all these things. They all support messaging, and they all support the maintenance of status updates. And I thought, this is really good. What we need now is some sort of a gateway. We need a gateway or a common language or a common protocol where these things can update each other. And 5 or 10 years down the track, I can say to Graham, send me a message when you've done something, or I'll send you a message and tell you what we're going to do for dinner tomorrow night. I won't have to specify email. I won't have to specify what social networking platform we're using, and I won't expect you to. I can just find you in my friends with whatever network that I'm using, that I'm comfortable using. These networks will all talk to each other, they'll all update each other, and the message will get through.
Spammer's paradise. Because all the spammer's got to do is be able to get a message into any of those networks, and they can then distribute their messages to all of them.
I think that the good thing at the moment is that we don't see a proliferation of spam on these systems like we do on email. And I think if people are designing these systems from the ground up, which they are at the moment, they're going to have that in the back of their mind. They're going to try and make it as spam-proof as possible. And as abuse-proof as possible. If you'll get email at the moment, you know my thoughts on email, and in 5 years' time, we're not going to be using
it. And anything else that becomes as ubiquitous as email is, or even nearly so, will be subject to spam. Look at spam SMSs that we're starting to get now on our mobile phones.
Well, I was just about to say that. What about the SMS system? We send hundreds, if not thousands, of SMSs each a year.
But most telcos are SMS-based email.
How many spam SMSs do we get? And we're restricted there on the number of spams we get because of the cost, potentially. Mm. You don't receive 90... You don't have 97% of your SMS traffic spam, do you?
No, I don't yet.
It would be the other way around. You might have 3% of your SMS traffic is spam.
Possibly.
If that.
It's can I just, if you ask me.
I've just turned my mobile phone on. It'll probably go off because that's what happens on radio when it happens. But at the very top of my not-so-clean Sony Ericsson here, it's got a little thing that says Contacts Myself, Exhibit A. You can see it up the top there on the mobile phone.
Yes. Those.
Good for radio. This is really good. But anyway, you'll have to trust me on this. But where it says Contacts Myself, what it is it's my presence. My contact info, my blog. So your presence, you can say, I'm on the tram heading home.
This is exactly what I'm talking about. You can do that on your mobile phone, and you don't have to care that people are logged in onto Bebo. You don't have to care that Graham's logged onto Twitter or that I'm logged into to Facebook. The fact is that your status is proliferated, if you like, across all the different networks. And that's how I can see it working and working well.
This device has got a GPS receiver in it, so it can actually put my location back through a central server where my group of friends are congregating,
to.
And they can say, oh, look, he's on a train, on a bus, on a plane, he's located at university, he's at work, or wherever it might happen to be.
If that's what you want it to do, it can.
Really, really handy to keep tabs on your missus when she's out shopping. Where is she now? Oh, she's down there at that shopping centre. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, so yeah, they're my thoughts on the current social networking systems. I don't think I'll be using Twitter, but I can see how useful it is, and I can see how useful it would be for all these things to talk to each other intelligently behind the scenes.
Counter-terrorism agents have launched an investigation into a multinational terror threat made against Australians using internet social networking site Facebook.
Ooh.
The investigation, the first of its kind, was prompted by the death threat emanating from the Middle East against a Jewish woman and her family from an alleged member of Iranian-backed terror outfit, Hezbollah. The woman received a death threat from the self-proclaimed terrorist through the website after she declined the man's online friendship request. See, it's fraught with dangers, isn't it, Facebook? I want to be your friend or I'll come and blow you up.
That's right. What about that email I received the other day? All I need is your bank account details and I'll send you a wire transfer of 115 million South African dollars. It's the same no matter what, isn't it? We're going to get... Everything's prone to abuse. If people want to abuse it, they'll find a way.
Absolutely. The man who described himself as Ibrahim Darini, that's the right way to say it, doesn't matter what his name is really, and a member of the Lebanon-based Facebook group was banned by the network after police launched their investigation. The victim, who lives here in Melbourne and is a member of a particular Facebook group, told police the alleged Lebanon-based Hezbollah operative promised to kill her and her family. So there you go.
Mm.
It just goes to show that local law enforcement communities take those sort of threats seriously.
Yes, they should. That's good.
But once again, that's one of the downsides of Facebook and those social networking sites, isn't it? Because, you know, you can get hoaxes there like you can in email, whether it be a threat or otherwise. And we all know. I don't know, I must admit I've never been threatened via email, but nonetheless, it's always a possibility these days. You remember the old days we used to get crank phone calls? You know, I'm sure you get crank emails these days.
You do.
Forge your identity and start scaring someone by sending emails from an account which is not that traceable. That's a show. That's thought for a show down the track, isn't it, really, Dr. Ron? We could talk about how traceable email and those sort of things are.
Digital signatures.
Yeah.
Yeah, once you post something or once you let something out there in the wild, how long does it stay out there for? Can you erase something once it's been released?
No.
No, you don't think so, Graham?
No. There are devices out there and websites. We've had them as Website of the Week, like the Wayback Machine.
Yeah.
And it just grabs snapshots of everything in a place and point in time, and that's it. How do you get something removed from that? Well, I'm sure there's a way and a means if you've got deep pockets. But if you're just like you, me, and the person in the next room, then chances are that's it.
But if it's something interesting, you know, then you can bet that it won't just be on Wayback Machine. Other people will have archived it as well.
Mm.
I think if anything interesting that you've released, no, never comes back.
Mm. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. That's enough of the philosophy tonight. We'll be back with the scary parts of the show, the website gadget and odd spot of the week after this.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual power. And I've got some residual
power. You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
overstating your fingerprints. Now,
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
kilos and things are as good as you're not expecting, even if they do it for
you. This talk to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
For Star Wars lovers across the universe, the R2-D2 home cinema projector. This is what Adam needs.
Adam's probably got one.
He might have one.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
You're my only hope.
For Star Wars fans everywhere, the R2-D2 DVD projector is a life-size replica of the Star Wars robot with an integrated CD-DVD player which projects the digital image up to 6.6 metres. External devices can be connected through analog and digital audio and video ports, and memory cards.
What do you need ports for? You'd have to use the force, wouldn't you, Luke?
And memory cards and USB memory sticks can also be connected. But wait, there's more. The R2-D2 DVD projector even has an iPod dock, so you can project photos or videos from your very own lounge room robot. A fully motorized design allows the operator to use a remote control, which incidentally is shaped like the Millennium Falcon, to move R2 forwards, backwards, left and right, and even rotate his head. All yours for the mere sum of $2,599 Australian dollars. You can buy R2-D2 online from nikko r2d2.com.
Here it is, everybody! The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
And if that website wasn't the best one you'd heard all for the entire show, here's a better website of the week, safesocialnetworking.com.
Oh, this is handy.
.com. We've been talking about Bebo, we've been talking about MySpace and MyFace and all such things, Twitter Tube. This website is designed around Bebo.com's social networking, but has useful resources and safety information for parents and school teachers. So this site has videos which cover topics such as online bullying, cyber safety and anonymity, as well as teaching materials and links to other online resources. So if you're a parent with young children who are starting to use the internet, or if you're a teacher, then this website might be useful for you. It's safesocialnetworking.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
While the opening of Heathrow's new Terminal Number 5 has not been without its problems, a computer glitch is being blamed for a coffee shop bill for four cappuccinos, costing £360,000.
That's not wrong, that's Melbourne Airport.
Terry Patsalidis.
Sydney Airport, Brisbane Airport. That's right, what are you, that's not the
only. £360,000, so we want to be good.
It's a bit excessive.
Good coffee beans. Terry Patsalidis of Ealing, West London, downed four cappuccinos in Terminal 5 and was hit with a bill for £360,000. She was waiting to meet a traveller and was handed the huge printout at the Giraffe Juice Bar. She said, "The baggage delay was so long, I finished off four coffees. When I got the printout, I told the waitress that, although they were very nice, I thought £90,000 a cup was a bit over the top. She went bright red when she saw my bill and said that it should have been for £12. Terry works for Chiswick Auctions and was waiting to meet a client arriving from Hong Kong. A Giraffe Juice Bar worker said it was just a glitch in the computer system. The bill was cancelled and everyone had a laugh."
Well, that's good. As long as they did have a laugh, the sense of humour is what's required.
And another chai latte on the Giraffe Juice Bar.
Oh, that's very handy. Yes. They gave her one on the house. As they should, really. If you've got a bill like that, you'd nearly fall over backwards and go, no, this can't be right.
There you go. Computer glitches everywhere.
Absolutely.
I think the same people that do the computers for that do the catering at the foot of you down here.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
That's what they'd love to charge. There's people out there going, yes, we charge that much for a coffee.
$29.95 for a meat pie.
Hey, next week, we've got a legend coming onto the show, Brett De Hoot.
Oh,
Hootville. He's on next week.
Fame.
If he doesn't pull the pin on us beforehand, we're going to be talking about email marketing and social networking, probably. But it'll be worth tuning in for, ladies and gentlemen. This man is a very funny man. His roots are in radio. He's been on many more radio stations than I can remember. And that's a few of them.
So I look forward to having Brett on the program. It'll be great listening.
Till next week, on behalf of the Tech Talk Radio team, it's been great being in your iPod earplugs, I reckon, hasn't it? Little white ones. People sitting at the bus stop, you're listening to us. Until next week, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Hanless, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 UNFM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.